You are listening to the FDNY Pearl Podcast, featuring members of the New York City Fire Department. We want to share stories from the field, best practices, lessons learned, and help save lives.
Welcome to the FDNY Pearl Podcast. I'm your host, Battalion Chief Brian Mulry. The New York City subway system is the oldest, longest, and most utilized public transportation system in the nation, with 472 stations in operation and over 2 billion riders in 2023. With these massive numbers come numerous responses for the FDNY throughout the system. Most incidents are minor in nature and handled without removing power to the subway cars. When a situation calls for it, such as serious fires, persons struck by a train, or major accidents, power removal will be necessary for the safety of our members as well as the passengers. This procedure has been developed and refined over the years, and today we're going to talk about the wide-ranging effects of using the blue light power removal boxes. With us today is the commanding officer of the PTSU, the Public Transportation Safety Unit, Battalion Chief Bill Ventura. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, appreciate you coming down.
No problem.
This podcast stemmed from an article you wrote in the spring 2023 edition of WNYF. You focused on the blue light power removal and an incident that occurred back in Brooklyn. I thought maybe it'd be a good idea to get you down here. You're a subject matter expert on all things subway. It's really massive, I know. When I was getting ready for this podcast, I went through AEC 207, which is our procedures on subways. And additionally, we have an under-river tube, and we have an ERP for a chemical attack in the subway, and there's so many volumes of information. We could do a series of podcasts on the subway, right?
Yeah, I'm sure people would really love that. But yeah, the subway system really is quite massive. Like you said, it's the largest in the world, and our responses down there vary from a sick passenger to major derailments, and we've had to deal with mostly everything within the past few years.
Yeah.
Even an attempted terrorist attack, the person that tried to blow themselves up in the subway tunnel with the suicide bomber. Mm-hmm. It really is an all-encompassing subway system, train system down there.
Yeah, it's pretty extensive. But all right, well, listen, let's start off. Maybe we could take a few minutes and just explain to us the function of the Public Transportation Safety Unit.
The Public Transportation Safety Unit. We talk about it, we sometimes call it planes, trains, and automobiles, because that's what we cover. We're responsible for inspecting every railroad station within New York City, as well as all the bridges and tunnels and the under-river tubes, whether it be New York City Transit, the Amtrak tubes, and even now the two Long Island Railroad tubes that are coming out of the new Grand Central Madison Station. Along with that, we track all the construction projects that are going on within the infrastructure, whether it be standard standpipe replacement, sprinklers in the stations, or even now we're talking about the extension of the Second Avenue subway or the new tunnels going to New Jersey that we're in planning.
Tell me about that. What is the extension of the Second Avenue subway they're proposing?
I believe it's from 92nd Street up to 125th Street. It'll actually tunnel right under 35 and 14, turn into the Lexington Avenue station, the 4, 5, and 6. They're in the early planning for that. We're just now talking about fire protection within the tunnels and the stations themselves.
Man, you have so many responsibilities when you think about it. How many agencies are there that run trains into this city? I mean, you just named half a dozen, and I'm sure that's only scratching the surface.
Let's see. You got New York City Transit, Long Island Railroad, Metro North, New Jersey Transit, Amtrak, PATH, the AirTrain, and then there are various freight agencies that run throughout the outer boroughs.
So much. All right. Today we're going to focus first off on the utilization of the blue light power removal boxes found throughout the transit system. Before we get started, give us a brief overview of exactly what these things are.
The blue light box, or what transit calls them, the emergency boxes, are boxes located throughout the entire New York City transit system. They're approximately every 600 feet apart. At the blue light station, there's a power removal box. It's a small red box with a switch inside of it, a yellow telephone box, and then a 20-pound dry chemical extinguisher. If you want to see a photo of it, just go look at the article in the spring 2023 issue of WNYF. The switch within the box shuts power to the third rail in that general area. Our procedures state that if you do activate the blue light power removal box, you're supposed to pick up the phone, dial the extension that's listed on the inside, and that'll connect you right to the New York City Transit Rail Control Center, known as the RCC. The problem is these boxes, when you activate them, shut off power to a wide area.
We're going to get to that because I didn't know that until I read your article, and you provided a little schematic. We'll talk about that incident as we get a little further.
And that's something I didn't really know about till I got to PTSU and started dealing with the phone calls from New York City Transit. When we activate these boxes, normally I get a phone call or an email from somebody at New York City Transit asking, hey, why did you do this? We had power off already. And I thought, from talking to a lot of people within the fire department, they all thought that, hey, it only deactivates the third rail from...
In the vicinity.
Yeah, in the vicinity.
That's
from
what I thought.
To the next blue light. It wasn't until I actually saw the schematic and was actually down at the RCC when somebody pulled the blue light, it wasn't us, where I saw the wide effects of what it took out. Transit does have a procedure for when it is pulled. They contact everybody that's within the area, whether it be a train, whether it be station personnel, track workers, to contact them to see why it was pulled and if they could put power back on, because their main concern is moving people. Yep. And if power's off, they can't move people.
At all times, our power removal has to go through our dispatcher at the same time. So what's the difference between when they pull a blue light, you say it puts power to a general area, versus power removal via the RCC?
The best way to explain it is when we use a blue light to remove power, it's like using a sledgehammer. When they use the RCC to remove power, it's like using a scalpel. They can knock it down to just our limits and remove power from that, leaving the rest of the system energized and people not stranded.
Yeah.
Because when you remove the power from the third rail, the trains lose power, they lose lights, they lose heating and air conditioning, and it becomes a major issue in extreme weather of people being stranded in the dark, the heat, or the cold before they'll start kicking out windows and evacuating the train on their own.
Which automatically escalates the incident, because passengers on the track bed is the life hazard.
You took now what could have been a person under, which we could have handled within a certain number of minutes, and now you have civilians roaming the dark subway tunnel. They may wander into an area where there is power, and we know from being down there, it's not exactly the best place to go walking. Trip hazards, dangers, rails, switches, any number of hazards within the subway system that can trip up an experienced person, let alone somebody who's just down there for the first time.
Yeah. When it becomes necessary to utilize the blue light removal system, what should the IC consider? And we kind of touched on it, but is there anything bigger, like specific actions they need to consider right away?
Life is always the priority, and that whole imminent peril, if the person is on the tracks and they're moving awfully close to the third rail and we don't have confirmation powers off yet, then yes, that would be an instance where activation of the blue light would be necessary. Where it becomes a little more unnecessary is if it is, you know, it's one person down there and it's a confirmed DOA.
Which is often the case.
Often the case.
Transit employees, you know, again, they're also trying to move people. When power is removed, what can we expect transit employees to do when power is removed suddenly, as in the case of the blue light? The first move is they want to get to the station. Is that correct?
Yes. But the transit employees that are on the scene with us, they might not necessarily know that we activated the blue light. It may take a minute or two for the communications to get down from the RCC to the personnel on scene. Back at the RCC, there'll be visual indications that power's been removed by a blue light. There'll be warning bells and alarms going off that we've activated the system. The first thing that transit does when they have a passenger strike is they get out and they try to look under the train. If that person is under the train, or if they see a victim under the train, they'll immediately call back and start the power removal process. That's even before we're dispatched. So it is entirely possible that power has been removed from that track.
That's common.
Before we're even out the door. And what we're trying to work on, what PTSU and operations and New York City Transit are trying to work on, trying to get the communication system where if power is removed and confirmed off on that track, to be able to have New York City Transit tell the dispatchers when they're giving the information, hey, listen, you got a person struck at the 53rd Street station, power's removed from 42nd to 63rd already.
It is helpful having an experienced employee giving you the specifics about which line. Well, let's talk about also the article. You focused on an incident you had at the DelKalb station back in Brooklyn a few years back. Again, I'd point people towards the schematic that's in the article in the WMYF magazine. And it shows the breadth of the area that the power was removed in that one instance. So maybe give our audience a brief overview of what happened that day.
It was a report of a person struck. Our unit showed up on scene, and they decided it was necessary to activate the blue light.
And it may what?
It was one of those times where, as you know, we play a game of telephone when we're asking for power off. It'll be the officer who's on platform.
And that's who's deeming an immediate life.
Immediate life threat. We'll call the chief who's at the command post or up on street level. The chief calls the dispatcher calls transit. Transit picks up the phone and has to call the power director, who's the person that actually removes power, and goes in and pulls the breakers, removing the power where we need it. When that's done, then we repeat the whole process again. The power director calls transit calls the dispatcher calls the chief, and the chief, we go through the core relay or the repeater system, and we get back down to the... It took me 30, 45 seconds to say it just now.
Yeah.
Right. It's going to take a lot longer for that to happen. Meanwhile, we're standing on track level waiting to go down there.
Sometimes with transit employees on scene.
Sometimes with transit employees, other agencies coming in. So
yeah,
it was during this period where transit had already removed power. We activated the blue light, we got the person out, we saved the person's life. That's the thing, that person was alive. But by doing that, like I said in the article, it was a nice, hot, steamy June morning.
Yeah, and the summer.
Transit had cut power off to that station. They had removed power to the safe limits of the station where our members could have gone down on the track and retrieved the person and got them up, and everything would have been fine. But by removing power, I believe it was over 10 stations, a underriver tube, and the approach to the Williamsburg Bridge we took out. And in talking after the incident was over, they'd explained to us exactly what we had done and how it happened.
Yeah, right. I'm sure some of them, they're not all the same.
They're not all the same because, like you said in the beginning, it's an older system, and you're talking very heavy-duty breakers and cables and lot of electricity running through these things.
And as we both know, again, sounds like we're reciting the books, we are not to operate on live tracks unless life is in imminent peril.
Yes, and before we operate on the tracks in imminent peril, if we haven't received confirmation of power off through our dispatcher, we're to activate the blue light, removing power in that area.
Right.
This is a redundant system that we're using for our own safety. And we know that either the blue light or confirmation from transit through our dispatcher are the only ways that we know for our members that it's safer to operate on the tracks. We are continually working to refine this process and shorten up that time frame. We are working with transit right now to improve our radio systems within the RCC to enable the transit liaison officer, or TLO, access to the department radio, and maybe in the future we can shorten up our procedures or shorten up the time frame where it takes to get confirmation.
Yeah, and you mentioned the TLO. You know, it's another tool the IC has to assist with power removal and the exchange of pertinent information with the Rail Control Center or the RCC. Let's talk about the Transit Liaison Office. And you and I were talking before the podcast. Has it been around for 20 years or so? Because the bulletin's dated 2004.
I don't know if it's been around for 20 years or so, but I believe it morphed out of a couple of other agencies. I know that right now for New York City Transit, there is a battalion chief stationed there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They're there to be our liaison within the Rail Control Center. They're available to exchange information with New York City Transit personnel in real time, getting that from the incident commander in the field via cell phone or radio.
Yeah, it's so valuable to have one of our members that you could talk directly with.
It is, and I believe the New York City Transit TLO kind of morphed out of what we deal with Amtrak, where if there's an incident within Penn Station or the surrounding tunnel area, we automatically send a battalion chief to Penn Station Control on 31st Street. And we've even expanded it even further now, where if there's an incident within Metro North Railroad, we send a battalion chief to Grand Central, where Metro North Control is, and Long Island Railroad, we send a battalion chief to Jamaica where they control all their systems.
That's interesting. So what battalions go out in Jamaica?
In Queens, it's the 5-0, leave the 5-1 and the 5-4 are trained.
Penn Station?
On the Penn Station box, I believe it's the 9th Battalion that automatically goes there.
Okay.
Of course, if the first new battalion, Battalion 7, is out, they're going to Battalion 9 goes to the command post.
And Metro North?
The 8th is the assigned battalion there. Like I said, it moves around depending on who's available.
Yeah. Since it's the topic of the day and something you see on the subways from time to time, I know for sure you guys are dealing with it, but how about lithium-ion mobility devices on the subway system?
Lithium-ion devices are a very real concern for all the rail agencies. We regularly talk about it during meetings that they have concerns about these mobility devices on their trains. As far as I know, most, if not all, of the rail agencies that we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast have rules in effect to stop people from charging them on the trains, but there is no rule against people bringing them on the trains. And as we've been seeing in our own fires, charging is the main culprit, it seems like, but sometimes these things go into thermal overload even when they're not charging. There was an incident in Toronto not that long ago where an e-bike caught fire and it incinerated the entire inside of a subway car. And it's a very real concern for all these agencies. As a matter of fact, it's such a real concern that our hazmat unit, in conjunction with New York City Transit and Amtrak, is in the process of setting up live tests where we've got a couple of decommissioned train cars that we're going to put a couple of batteries into thermal runaway and see exactly what happens inside these sealed up cars. This is the research that's going down. We have brought in other outside agencies to come and look at this and monitor the conditions inside the car, whether it be temperature, smoke, what kind of off-gassing is occurring. And it's going to be a very eye-opening test, I think. Our relationship with these agencies has evolved over the years where we're working together to kind of fix these problems. And the lithium ion is a good indicator of that, where everybody's kind of coming together and working to fix this problem.
All right, well, that's good information. Thanks for coming down. Maybe we'll have you back, like I said, the subway system and the volumes of information that we have in our procedures about operations in these tunnels and under river tubes, sound powered telephone communications. You can go on and on. It's extensive.
You could do a lot of time on under river. Underground construction is amazing. The amount of work and the amount of people and the amount of underground construction that goes on within New York City amazes. 5-6 years ago, you walked down a construction stairwell 10 stories down into a giant cavern, and now you go in there and it's a fully functioning train station.
Yeah.
And the plans, they're extending the 2nd Avenue subway up to 125th Street and plans to dig 2 new tunnels to New Jersey coming out of Penn Station. So the amount of underground construction is not slowing down anytime soon.
Yeah, doesn't sound like your workload is going to be either. But listen, thanks for coming down. We appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to this edition of the FDNY Pro Podcast. For more training and information from our subject matter experts, go to FDNYPro.org.
FDNY Pro is online at FDNYPro.org. Subscribe today and get inside access to the FDNY. Learn more about our publications, professional conferences, and other tools for first responders. Train with New York's bravest.
Hi, everyone. I'm Captain Randy Lee.
And I'm Captain Andrew Brown, and we co-host the Join FDNY podcast.
Follow us to listen or watch the Join FDNY podcast for insights into careers with the department, tips for candidates, and stories from FDNY members who've gotten on the job and love what they do.
You know what I like most about this FDNY podcast, Randy?
What's that?
The amount of information and the individuals that we speak with that share the other opportunities within the FDNY.
Expanding outside of being an EMT, paramedic, or firefighter, it's like a sneak peek behind the curtains where most people don't get to see.
So join us at the Join FDNY podcast.
Come check us out.